The Environment, Economic Development, and Agriculture Division. Okay. People, we need some quiet in here. We'll come to order for Wednesday, March 18th, 2015. We've got a long agenda today, people, so let's try and get through this. Senator Stumpf, let's start out with Senate File 468.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. There is, Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment. The Senate File 468 relates to workforce housing and a program that was initiated last year. And I have two very knowledgeable people with me would like to, one would like to go through the amendment, and one can share some of the situation in that we have in northwestern Minnesota and kind of give you an idea of the difficulty in trying to provide affordable, to try to provide housing for a growing part of the state. So I think, Mr. Chairman, maybe I should turn it over to...
Senator Stumpf, this is an author's amendment, and you haven't been before another committee yet, right?
It hasn't, no.
So do you want to just put this on as your...
It has? Oh, yeah. It has been.
All right. Okay. All right. Then go ahead and explain the amendment. And incidentally, a quorum is present. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Hines. Mr. Patrick Hines from League of Minnesota Cities.
Say your name for the record, and then go ahead and...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patrick Hines. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to quickly thank Senator Stumpf for authoring this bill again, and thank Senator Weber, who's been a co-author on a number of our workforce housing bills. I will walk through the A5 amendment. Lines 1.2 through 1.9 are designed to allow a joint county-city economic development authority to qualify for the grant program and to apply for bids like for grants like other cities. That is a specific county-city authority between Grand Marais and Cook County. It's the only one of its kind. So lines 1.2 through 1.9 would accomplish that. Line 1.10 changes the distance between a city applying for a grant and the employer who has certified that it is in need of additional employees but cannot hire them because of a lack of workforce housing. In the current bill, the employer has to be located within the city or within 15 miles of the city. The language on 1.10 expands the distance to 60 miles. On 1.11, in the current bill, there is a population floor so that a city has to be at least 1,500 people to apply for a grant. This would reduce that floor to 1,000 people. On lines 1.12 and 1.13, in the bill that was passed last year as the pilot program, the maximum grant was 10% of the project costs, or $400,000. And what we saw with the Roseau project, which we'll discuss a little later, that probably was not high enough. So the bill that Senator Stumpf has increases the maximum grant to 25%, or $1 million. What the amendment does is reduce the local match from 1-to-1 to 2-to-1. So for every two state dollars, the locals would have to come up with one. And that is because the grant cap has increased, and that would be a great deal of money for a local community to come up with for a match. The appropriation changes, beginning on line 1.15, I'll describe them this way. The purpose of this workforce housing program is to provide assistance for market-rate housing, and market-rate housing is defined as housing that does not receive any subsidy or financial assistance that requires any of the units to have income restrictions on the renters. And there has been a great deal of discussion about whether to keep the program like that, or to expand the eligibility so that an affordable housing project could apply to this pool. And so what the amendment does is it says for the first 2 years of the program, only those market rate housing projects can apply. And at the end of the biennium, if there's money left over, then the eligible applicant pool would expand to include projects that include components of affordable housing. And it also, and I think that is everything in the amendment.
It actually sounds like a pretty good one. Any discussion or questions on the amendment? Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering why would we not want to have people under a certain income level? Why would we not want to have affordable housing if that's the need?
Mr. Chair and Senator Scalzi, the need that we're trying to address with this program is the need for market rate housing. And that sort of gets to the whole point of the bill. So what we've defined workforce housing as is housing that is not receiving any affordable housing credits. And the reason is, I'll go briefly into the ROSO project, if I may. The pilot program that was passed last year awarded $325,000 to the ROSO project. It's called Parkland Place. That's currently under construction. The reason that project needed money is because the construction cost of the project is $3.2 million. The appraised value of the project is $2.2 million. So the day that that project is completed, the developer would be underwater. And the reason for that is that the rental rates in ROSO are very low. The average rental rate in the community is approximately $550. In order to cash flow the Parkland Place project, they would need to charge rents of $1,000 or $1,100, which they really can't make that big of a jump above market. When they build it, they're going to charge $800 a month rent, which is well above market, but it still needs help to be financed. So what we're trying to accomplish here is to fill a gap where we have market rate projects that have great demand to be built but aren't getting built because the financing is not working. So this workforce housing program would be separate and distinct from the Housing Challenge Grant Program, for instance, or federal housing grant projects. So there are existing projects that an affordable unit can apply for assistance, and so we have designed this to be for those market rate projects in communities like ROSO or Worthington or Perham that can't finance those market rates on their own. I realize that's a very long answer. I hope it was clear.
Well, but to Senator Scalzi's point, if all the money isn't used in the up front, then it can go to the other ones that she's concerned about.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. So this would create essentially a window for a couple of years to see what types of projects would get going, and if there was money left in that program, then any other project could apply for it at that time.
Okay. So Senator, any other questions or comments? Senator Osmek?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
On the amendment, Senator?
Yes, Osmek? On the amendment. You've got an amendment that changes line 2.18 from population 1,500 down to population 1,000. How many more cities are you bringing in as a result of that to this program?
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmek, I don't know precisely how many cities that would bring in. I could find out. I imagine it would be more than 100 additional cities. I could try to find out a specific number for you.
Senator Osmek, I have to find out if White Lakes is under is 1,000 or under, so I'm not exactly sure. So it might have to go down a little bit yet. You never know.
Well, Mr. Chair, you could just export them.
No, I mean the number in the bill.
Or export the people.
Mr. Chair, Google might have that answer pretty
quick. They might. So Senator Saxhog moves the A5 amendment. Any further questions or comments or discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is adopted. Okay, Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and members, what I'd like to do is ask Larry Cruz, who's the city.
Senator Stumpf, you're going to have to pull that microphone closer.
I'd like to ask Larry Cruz, who's the city administrator for Thief River Falls, to kind of give you a picture of the problems that we're experiencing in that area and why we need to try to address it with different tools to help with the housing.
Mr. Chair and committee members.
Say your name for the record.
My name's Larry Cruz, and I'm the city administrator in Thief River Falls. Thank you. Thief River Falls, population 8,600, has 10,000 jobs. As you may know, it's home to DigiKey, who employs about 3,000 people, and Arctic Cat, who have about 1,300 people.
Last time I was at Thief River Falls, DigiKey only employed 2,000, so they're up to 3,000 now?
Well, I think it's 28. It depends if you're looking at some part-time and stuff, but I think the number right now is about 2,800.
Wow, okay.
And
nobody knows what they do either. It's really good.
Yeah, for those that don't know, it started in a garage. They sell electronic components all over the world. You order something today in China, you can get it within 72 hours. And this is one of the greatest problems that I have. We have a need for, like, DigiKey could hire 300 to 350 employees, and Arctic Cat could hire 100 to 150 in all a relatively short time right now. And as you know, DigiKey opened a plant in Fargo to do some distribution, and we just like to keep those jobs in Minnesota. Thief River Falls is looking at a multifaceted approach on the housing. We do have a 24-unit market credit program that is going to be built this summer. We also have a tax increment project that's 230 units, 60 units for affordable housing. Last year, when they bid that project, it came in $1 million over budget. This year, and they couldn't do it because it the numbers just didn't work. This spring here, they rebid it, and they're still $700,000 over budget. So they're looking for ways that we can make that work. I want to thank the legislature for passing the pilot housing bill. Roseau has had a project this past fall. And just this week, the City of Thief River submitted an application to DEED for a $400,000 state participation, and that will leverage 104 units. And Thief River was very fortunate that we were able to get such a high number of units. It only comes to about 4% of a project. So the state's money, $400,000, will leverage another $400,000 of local funding that's from the city, county, and school. But the total project will be $8 to $10 million. And it's probably unusual that we got so many units for the dollars. So it's a little different what Roseau experienced. But I don't think you can expect that to be the norm in the future because, as Patrick said, the rents just do not support the construction costs that we're experiencing. And so we greatly encourage your support of these tools. Cities... need a number of different tools to make this stuff happen. Recently, we're working with a company that needs employees, but they're looking out of state for other options, and so we really want to keep those jobs here in Minnesota. There's a lot more information in my presentation. I know time is of the essence, and I'd open it up for any questions that you might have.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Larry, I think you said your name was. If you get state dollars, what impact does that have on cost of construction? In that, are you subject to pay prevailing wages once you get state dollars? Because I know in a lot of projects that becomes a criteria, and I'm just wondering if that affects your projects at all, or the bids you're talking about already have prevailing wages factored into them.
Well, prevailing wages, we estimate cost about an additional 10%, and yes, that affects every project. The synergies of our particular project that we have going, it's not quite so critical, but for the typical project, I would say that extra 10%, it just wouldn't pay to use the state money. It's not enough. And so the increase that's being proposed, I believe, would make the difference in that working.
Okay. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I Thank you so much for giving us this presentation, because I know DigiKey is a wonderful company for the state to have. But I'm wondering about this one bullet point in here. You say two developer projects have been stifled by not in my backyard syndrome. So that means that somebody didn't want rental or affordable housing, or what does that mean? And I guess the reason I'm asking is I'm wondering how we could get rid of that problem. I don't know.
Mr. Cruz.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scholes, that's a tough one to crack. We had Annie Park was sold to a developer. Developer was going to build 24 units of market credit housing, and the neighborhood had a revolt, you might say, and so the city said no, that it couldn't go forward. And then the developer went to a second site, and again the neighborhood revolted, and the city yielded to the pressure, which I think happens a lot. There's a sense that anywhere else but in my backyard. And the proposed 24 units that is going forward move to another neighborhood. But each time this happens, it delays it a year. And so this is now the third year for us on this market credit project. And finally, it's going forward in a neighborhood that is there's not so many affected, and so it's being accepted.
Senator Dietzick.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Senator Stump, and I don't know if you know. How is this, and I understand the issue, and so I appreciate you bringing this forward, but how is this different from what we did in taxes last year?
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dietzick, we had two different proposals in taxes. One was trying to allow the city to use TIF, which is different than the proposal, the grant program. The grant program basically was less, I believe the maximum was it 500? The maximum last year was 400,000, and then also it was restricted in the amendment that was adopted. It was restricted to primarily a few cities that are located up in an area in northwestern Minnesota. This, in a sense, has become statewide, and the dollar amount is higher, and the match is less. Right back then it was, I think, one for one, and now if this is passed, it would be two for one, two state dollars for one local dollar.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Anything else from the
Mr. Chair?
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cruz, back to your comment. To these projects, is prevailing wage required? And you made the comment in some cases it wouldn't make sense, or that you take the state dollars wouldn't pay to pay that extra expense. How is it not required on some projects, and so that's what makes it workable, or what? I guess I didn't follow that as I think more about that. And
Mr. Chair, Senator
Cruz,
I think that a dollar state money goes in, prevailing wages apply. Mm-hmm. We did try and figure out how we could work around that in a number of different ways, and we're told that you just can't. So yes, prevailing wages apply. Some developers are used to working with prevailing wages, and doesn't seem to be as big a deal. But when you get into smaller projects with smaller developers that don't have the skill and talent to track and do all the reporting, it becomes a bigger obstacle. But there definitely is a cost that does make the project harder to do with prevailing wages.
Okay, thanks.
Just maybe if I could expand, and different trades have different wage rates around the state, and so that also comes into play. In some areas and some trades, the going rate is the prevailing wages, and others like a elevator repair person is $80 an hour, and you know, it just becomes very, very expensive for a project. So there's a lot of nuances that, you know, different trades that work on a project, that some are high, some are low. But in the overall scheme of things, it does cost the project additional money for the state wage. In our case, the state money is about 4% of a project, and if state wages, prevailing wage rates, add a few percentage on, you can see where that would negate the incentive.
Well, Ms. Cruz, some of us think that if you're going to get state money, you should be paying the people that are doing the job also, and not just the people that are going to benefit from the housing. And so that's why the prevailing wage is there.
And we agree.
Okay, so. Good. I'm happy to hear that. All right, any further comments or questions? Senator Weber.
Mr. Chairman, just one comment to that, though. We have to understand prevailing wage does vary from around the state, and not always do the state numbers adequately reflect those differences. Regarding the recent broadband, even though the grant that my home area got, it came with that close to turning away that money because the prevailing wage issue created that much problem with the project going forward. So that is an issue we do need to visit at some point.
And how do you want to visit it?
Well, I think in respect to Senator Stump's bill, this is probably not the time to have that discussion, but we do need to have that discussion.
I figure that much means you got the project.
Well, they figured out a way to do it.
Yeah,
but
that's good.
It almost was turned down.
Yeah, well, we would have taken the money if you didn't want it, just so you know.
Mr. Okay. Chairman, I know you're always willing to take the money,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, if there's no further comments, then we'll... Senator Stump, unless you want to move it out of here, or do you want to leave it here, Senator Stump? We can leave it here and just put it in the omnibus bill.
Mr. Chairman, and there was one, I don't know if Senator Saxhog has an amendment.
Does Senator Saxhog have an amendment?
Can I just do the 85?
Yeah, We did the
A5. Are you talking about another one?
Yes. There was a very, very short one. I didn't want to leave here and
Mr.
have
Chair,
Senator Saxhog disappointed.
Council's... Oh, it's the A2. It's the 816.
That was an amendment off the world.
That would be good.
Yeah, you do it.
This one right here, 468.
Yeah.
If you just a minute, Mr. Chair.
We can do this at a later point.
Well, I have it.
You got it? Okay.
A7 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I move the A7 amendment.
Wait, let's see what it is. Okay, Senator Saxhog, go ahead and explain the A7 amendment if you'd like. It's coming around. It's coming around to everybody.
I'm going to ask counsel.
Mr. Chair, the.
Oh, yeah. I can't even get a bill here. Maybe.
Pretty straightforward, it looks like to me. You got it there? Here.
No, I have it.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Ingebrigtsen wants to co-author the amendment with Senator Saxon.
Maybe.
So, Mr. Chair, the A7 amendment would... I will release it for Senator Westrum. It is a very short amendment, but it would allow the grants to go for new modular homes or new manufactured homes or new manufactured homes on leased land or in manufactured home parks. So it would just allow the use for the grant funds to be included for those manufactured or modular homes.
And the bill doesn't allow for this?
Right now, it would be for only for market rate residential rental properties. Unless those properties, the modular homes or the manufactured homes, are rental properties, they would not qualify for the grant program.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, and either Senator Saxog or Council, when we talk manufactured homes or modular homes, there is a difference in my mind on those, and I just would like for the record, what are we doing? Manufactured homes often refers to trailer houses. Modular refers to being built in a set location and then brought out to the site in either walls or partially cubicles built and put together on site with a crane. Once they're seamed together, you probably wouldn't know they're not stick built on site. What, Senator Saxog, is there a distinction? And I ask
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, there is a distinction, but there's no such thing as a trailer house. It's manufactured home, and well made, and so. This particular amendment would include both of them.
Okay, so the manufactured would be a like a mobile home park,
yes,
type property.
In fact, that's exactly what the amendment says at the end, or in a manufactured home park.
Okay,
are we sure we want that,
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Bruner. I'm with the Manufactured Modular Home Association. And to address Senator Westrom's question, the difference between the two, while typically they're built in the same plant, it's the difference is the building code. They're both built to the state building code. The modular homes tend to be the homes that might be the two-story homes brought in sections and put together. They're always real property. In other words, they're real estate, always just like a site-built home, a manufactured home built to the state code, but also the federal building code. They too, at least in Minnesota, 80% of the time are real property or real estate financed with conventional rate mortgages, or they may be placed on lease land or in a manufactured home community. And the intent of the amendment is to assure that these are new manufactured homes, and new manufactured homes would be built to the state code. Essentially, you can't tell the difference between the two. I mean, we have to train appraisers how to actually tell the difference, kind of thing. So
are you saying once you pop these down, they stay there? They don't get pulled out the next day if someone wants to move?
On a 80% of, for example, in a manufactured home, go on a permanent foundation financed with conventional mortgages. Those that go on lease land, there's a possibility that they could be relocated, but I think the statistics are that, well over, 80% of those, once they're sited in a manufactured home community, remain there.
Okay. Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I guess the issue I might raise is on the manufactured side. The modular, I think there's no issue. It's whether it's built on site, stick built, or stick built in a factory and craned in, you've got a permanent structure when you're done. I guess the concern or question I would have, Senator Saxog, is I understand manufactured houses are a fast and a quick way to bring in housing and deal with those issues. I guess I'd raise a little concern, and I'm interested in the other committee's feedback, but they do have axles, and they are not treated the same as permanent residential property. And, for a variety of reasons, they can have wheels put back on them and moved out, and it's kind of mobile or different type of housing than something with a foundation or a basement under it. I think that could be a nuance as well, and I would be more open to sites that are going to use a manufactured home and put a foundation underneath it. But, Mr. Chair, I just raised the question because I need to think about it.
So. It's a good question. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have, in my district, I have 9 manufactured housing parks. 9 of them. So a lot of times people think that there's high wages in the metro area. There's a lot of people in the metro area who are working for very low wages. And I've door-knocked these mobile home parks. Well, I call them, I should say manufactured home, I'm sorry. They're decent people who are working. This is a good way to provide housing for people who otherwise would not have housing. And I think that, I don't care if it's got an axle or not, I think all of mine are on rental property. But this is what you could consider cluster housing, so that you have fewer you know, sewer lines and water lines, because they're in a space that's confined. It's a good use of property, and it's a good use for an area that needs housing and cannot otherwise provide it. And so I don't like people, when people start to seem as if they don't want this type of housing. They're decent people, but they're just working for low wages. And in all my years on the city council and now as a senator, I have no reason to think that these 9 manufactured housing parks in my district are any, they don't present problems. They're a good housing stock for someone who's working for low wages, which I think would work here.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
One of the plans that the city of Thief River Falls has is that it has a multiple, the city purchased land, and it has multiple zoning areas, and so part of that was for this type of housing stock, and it is high quality, and if somebody sees the house, sometimes you can't tell, or you can't generally tell the difference, and most of the time. And I don't know how Thief River is addressing if it's going to be all on foundations or slab type concrete. I'm not sure. But what,
Mr. Cruz.
Mr. Chair and committee members, in your packet, I believe about the fourth to the last page or second to the last page, you'll see a plat. The city has an option on 70 acres of land. We bought our first 5 acres for the first 104 units of multifamily. That 70 acres is planned to hold about 1,000 apartments total. You'll see there that there's a mobile home court. It's the lighter colored. You can just see the cul-de-sac with the homes on there. Next to that is a little darker gray area. That we're flipping that whole plat over, and there's proposed about 100, a little over 100 units of manufactured housing. And typically, I would say that would be housing on a permanent foundation, whether it be a basement and or piers without the frame underneath and wheels. And so, like I say, we have a multifaceted approach. We have the tax credits for affordable. We have tax increment affordable. Now we have the 104 units of market rate multifamily housing. And I didn't know that this was coming forward, but this is a key part of, you know, a segment of our market. Our market rate and affordable housing ends up being about, you know, $120,000 a unit. Some of this manufacturing can get in that $80,000 range and reach a different segment that can't afford either a single-family modest home or even some of the apartments.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe to Senator Westrom. There's an issue with regard to these homes in that they have different sales tax provisions. So we're dealing with some of this in the tax committee this year. And actually, with the information that I have, I think they're more similar than they are dissimilar. But I guess my question is, so what is the concern? Is it if they're moved that you wouldn't want them to be eligible for the grant, or what would be an issue that would mean that these wouldn't qualify for the grant for housing? And trying to figure out if some kind of clawback mechanism would be needed, or what would be, what's the issue?
Senator Scoy, I think that's probably the biggest reason. If we're putting state dollars, taxpayer dollars into something, you want assurance that in 20, 30 years it's there. Now, a clawback, I know when Minnesota fix up loan funds, there's oftentimes a 10 or 20 year clawback if it doesn't continue to provide the or continue under the same owner, and they turn around and sell it and take the appreciated value out of it, they have to pay it back. And I mean, maybe something like that. But that would be my general concern. Is I'm Senator Scalzi. Don't get me wrong. I agree. Trailer houses, as we used to call them, manufactured houses, I realize is a more delicate word, but it's. I've got them in my district. They're affordable housing. I mean, at its base. But when the state is putting it in, what prevents that house from being moved in 5 or 10 years, and all of a sudden we put the money into it and it's gone. And so that's my issue.
I don't think I'm concerned about a clawback, because who knows how long the business is going to last. The business might not last as long as the house lasts. So, you know, they may have to move eventually, and I don't know if they'd move the house or if they'd sell it. So I don't think I'm worried about that, but I don't know if anybody else is. And I don't know if you are, Senator Scalzi. But.
No, I'm not, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to support Senator Saxon's initiative here, partly because in the work that we've done so far, as I said, I see more similarities between these than I do dissimilarities. And we're actually contemplating we're going to make the sales tax treatment for these the same, because we think they're very similar. And that would be a support of what Senator Saxon's trying to do.
I see Senator Ingberson. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm glad you cleared that up. That was one of my questions with regards to the taxing of the real property. The gentleman said that they are actually real property, but if they're going to be in a park, mobile park like that, maybe Senator Scoy, you could tell me how the taxing of each individual their own. So how does each individual pay taxes on that versus having a lot someplace that the city of Thief River might have for a manufactured home?
Go ahead and answer this, but we don't really need to deal with it here. But go ahead, Senator Scoy.
Okay, I'll be
if
very
you
brief.
Want to.
Well, just because my memory is not as good as it used to be. If you build a home stick on a foundation, you pay sales tax on the materials, and that's it. If you buy a manufactured home, you pay sales tax on half of the cost of the home. If you buy a modular home, or I'm not sure which way it is, but then you pay like 65% of the. It depends on the mechanism that the home is placed on the site as to how it's taxed. And when we look at the final outcome, I'm thinking that the final outcome is very similar, and probably they should be taxed more the same than dissimilar. And so that's the only reason I brought this up is because we're now talking about these homes here is whether they would qualify for this grant. And in my experiences, I think they should, and that's what I wanted to speak in support of what Senator Saxon was doing.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this also might be getting to what the conversation is. So it's rental property in the bill, and then is this going to be properties for and homes for rent or homes for people to buy? Might not matter.
Ownership. I'd be glad to. I mean, the intent, and these are homes that people would purchase. In the case that they may be on leased land, but the individuals would own the homes. The intent isn't to create rental housing through this.
Would it be like a land trust arrangement, or would
it could be? It could be a manufactured home community, or it could be leased land that someone has. A lot of times, homes end up on leased land if it's a farmstead, that kind of thing, for someone to live on. Their home on would be leased, the land would be leased then.
Okay. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, to that point, so would the dollars probably go, would they go towards developing the lots and the concentrated development area that Senator Scalzi talked about? I mean, you've got closer sewers, you've got less infrastructure distance. Is that what the dollars and grants would be partly to help, or would it help buy the houses and put them on there, and then the developer would turn around and either rent them or sell them, or some of both?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, I don't think the use of the grant money would change whether it was a multifamily house or a modular home on leased land, for instance. The program, at its essence, is trying to provide gap financing for the developer to get the houses built So in the Rosso project I mentioned earlier, you had a $3.2 million cost, and you had the bank was able to finance $1.7 million of that. So the state money really serves as a financing tool. So in the case of the Rosso project that received grant money in the pilot, the money was granted to the city from deed, and then the city made a 10-year forgivable loan to the developer to finance construction of the actual building. And I think it would be the same or similar for a modular home.
Okay. On the Sachs-Hogg Amendment, any further discussion? Seeing none on the A7 Amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Okay. Then, Senator Stump, you want to leave it here? Okay, so then we'll lay over Senate File 468 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Senator
Thank
Conan.
I thought he was Nelson's and while he's winning.
Senator Conan is here.
Then I was. You're winning the bet.
Going once.
Real estate industry. We've had to change.
There he is. Okay.
Yeah. We've had to change how we look at these houses, how they're entered into our MLS system. Because we could.
Senator Coonan, Senate File 1538.
But as this manufactured communities have changed and the buildings have changed and you've got state building codes and stuff, we've had to look at how we put them in and how we deal with them. Because I've got about five or three bathrooms and good taxes.
Anytime you're ready, Senator.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thanks for hearing Senate File 1538. The money for this proposal would target housing in communities with low housing vacancy rates, a development plan for current and future housing needs, and a community that has experienced job growth since 2005 with at least 2,000 jobs within the area, and there must be evidence of future job expansion or that workers commute 30 miles between their work and homes. I represent a district that is fortunate to have multiple large companies that provide good-paying jobs. Genio Turkey Company is headquartered in my district, along with Loco, a maker and seller of dairy processing equipment, affiliated medical centers, and also Life Sciences Incorporated, just to name a few. In the past few weeks, constituents have brought the issue of workforce housing to my attention and shared numerous examples of how companies in my district want to grow but worry about being able to fill the jobs. Steve Rehnquist, the executive director of Candyohai County and City of Willmar Economic Development Commission, expressed that Genio, one of the largest turkey plants in the region, employs 3,000 people in my area and wants to open another facility that could potentially employ another 100 to 300 people. They are worried, however, that there is not enough workers to fill these jobs openings, and they want Candyohai County and the City of Willmar to provide some assurances workers will be available. My district has one of the lowest unemployment rates and one of the lowest vacancy rates. We need more housing for our workers, and Senate File 1538 to fund the Challenge Fund Housing and Job Initiative will help us meet these housing needs. Minnesota Housing Housing and Jobs Initiative is versatile and helps create rental housing for households that earn up to $58,000, and for home ownership options for those with incomes up to $85,300. And Mr. Chairman, that's kind of what we're up to with the bill here, and I do have testifiers.
Who wants to go first?
I'll give it a shot. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm Chip Halbach, the Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership. And to many respects, this bill and this conversation as an extension of the prior bill and some of the other bills that will be before the committee today. They all have to do with the shortage, the crippling shortage of housing for workers across the state, in particular in greater Minnesota. So the bill before you here really is a subset of the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program, a program that's been around for many years. And this job growth and housing initiative subset of it actually was funded in for the biennium we are currently in. And so this would continue, but that was just a one-time funding, and this bill would continue the funding for into the future, the next biennium. I'm here speaking for the Housing Partnership and also for a group of organizations that have in working in greater Minnesota that have formed a task force to bring forward their point of view on what it takes to create decent housing for workers in greater Minnesota. And that's the sheet that was passed out in your packet, which just demonstrates the members of this task force and also the counties across greater Minnesota in which they provide services to. Also, we have done a lot of work in compiling the various housing studies that have our organization and others have paid for over the past several years. And so there also is a sheet in your packet which gives a highlight of those recent studies that have been compiled. And basically, it shows just in the communities where greater Minnesota communities where studies have been completed, there's a need for over 34,000 units for greater Minnesota's workforce. And most of those, at least in terms of the authors of the studies in response to what's happening in the community, are for rental housing. That's a little bit different than the last go-round in the mid-90s when there was a equal urgency for housing for workers in greater Minnesota. The next thing I would like to turn the committee's attention to is this sheet, and this might help also bring together the prior bill and testimony with the one that's now before you. Basically, it shows looking at incomes and household compositions typical in northwestern Minnesota, what some of those incomes are for one, two-member households. And then with the arrows here, you can see where the various programs that the state now has that would reach households with those incomes. So with the household where you have a cashier, really it requires a deep rent subsidy like Section 8 or the federal subsidy or public housing or something that would serve a household at that very low income. Then you go up higher in terms of stock and households with also personal care aides. Then you get into incomes that are being able to be reached by the existing TIF and federal low-income housing tax credit. And then moving further up with the incomes, you see that they is where the challenge program comes in, first with the rental and second with the home ownership affordability under the housing and challenge program. And then finally, there are incomes that exceed even what could be reached through the challenge program. And I think that's what one of the things Senator Stumpf was speaking to with his bill. Not every community across greater Minnesota needs housing at that would be at those very high incomes, but a number do. So we certainly understand why Senator Stumpf is offering his bill. This one, this bill before you, really does focus in on the incomes that can be reached through the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program. And I understand also that the governor's proposal for the supplemental budget also would put some money toward this purpose. Now I would like to, if it's okay, Mr. Chair, to turn it over to Bill King, who's the Vice President for Business Administration and Development at Cirrus Aircraft up in the northeastern part of the state to provide a point of view of an employer in terms of why these resources of all of the bills before you today will be very important.
Mr. King, just say your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Bill King, Vice President, Business Administration and Development, Cirrus Aircraft. As many of you may know, we have our headquarters in Duluth, Minnesota, and we are very proud to have been there now for over 20 years. We continue to develop and grow, and I'm here today at the request and invitation of some of the members of the task force that you just heard a little bit about. And very similar to Administrator Cruz, as he pointed out some of the challenges of various employers in his community, we are in Duluth and we're facing some of those, some very similar concerns and constraints in that housing is a significant issue relative to our effort at continuing to expand and grow. We're in the midst of a very significant expansion at Cirrus, and sort of we remain just adamantly committed to continuing our development and growth in Duluth and in the Twin Ports area. We have become something of a household name in aviation, and for the last 15 years, right here in Minnesota, we manufacture an aircraft referred to as the SR-22. It's the number one selling product in aerospace today in any category. So we're proud of that. Produced right here in Minnesota by Minnesotans. I think that's pretty cool in an area where, frankly, there was no aviation resources and manufacturing 20 years ago. It's enormous now and growing. And we'll be back before you on other related matters at another time. But today, as I sit here, we have a current gap or opening of 55 positions. We have 55 open positions right now, and we're thrilled. The reason we're thrilled is it was 150 a year ago. So we actually have made some progress in that, but clearly housing is getting to be a bigger challenge, certainly in outstate and in particular with us. We will bring many of the jobs, our entry-level jobs or jobs we fill locally. There's always a strain in that sort of entry-level world, but it runs the gamut. It's not uncommon for us to be trying to attract talent from out of the state. We fly them into state to interview for some of the higher-end jobs, engineering and so forth, highly specialized work, FAA-related designees that are very difficult jobs to attract. We get them in. We run them around town with a realtor. They very quickly look at us, come back, and shrug their shoulders and say, love the job. It'd be cool to live here, but I'm going to be settling for about half the house for the same amount of money in this marketplace, which seems mind-numbing to me when I know where they're coming from. But those are the kinds of challenges that we're facing, and we're here today to speak in favor of continued support for the Challenge Fund in that it hopefully will help to continue to alleviate the constraint that we're feeling for helping our staff as we're developing and growing to identify housing in their specific element or area of their interest, whether it's high-end or low-end or in-between. It's just a very, very difficult market. We are committed to continuing to grow in Minnesota. Our program we'll be talking about later certainly promises to hire well in excess of 150 additional jobs. All those people have to live someplace, and we're sort of bullish on where we think we're headed with our end of the business, and certainly as hearing Administrator Cruz talking about the industry in his community, outstate Minnesota, greater Minnesota, we've got some significant needs for housing, and we're very hopeful that utilizing these kinds of programs, we can go a long ways towards achieving some of the objectives to fulfill that desperate need and allow us to continue to grow our businesses, continue to expand our reach, expand our tax base, and become even better employers and more significant players even within our own industry. So with that, I'd be more than happy to address any questions you might have for us, but we're honored to be here to speak in favor of it and encourage support of the Challenge Fund.
Senator Coonan, do you have somebody else who wants to testify? Jamie Thielen?
Mr. Chairman, I guess he didn't make it.
Didn't make it, okay. All right. Are there any questions or comments from anybody on the committee. All right. Does anybody else feel a burning desire to testify on this particular bill? Okay, then, Senator Coonan, in that case, we'll lay over Senate File 1538 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Appreciate
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator James, is he here? There you are. Senate File 816. Welcome to the committee, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Senator Gary Dames, and I'm here today to present Senate File 816. And, Mr. Chair, I have the A-15 amendment. If somebody could pass that to get it in the shape, I'd prefer the bill to be in.
Senator Dietzick moves the A-15 amendment to get in the shape the author would prefer. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All the motion adopted. Okay, Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and today I have with me Mark Solberg, and Mark is the city administrator for the city of Sleepy Eye. And to start out with, I'd just kind of like to go through the bill and just kind of give an idea what the bill is all about. The first section allows for the Commissioner of Economic Development to establish the Workforce Housing Grant Program and to manage the awarding of those grants. The Subdivision 2 deals with the what it takes to be a qualified program applicant, and those requirements include a vacancy rate for rental housing located in the city or any other city located within 25 miles or less. Do that city have 5% or less at least for the prior 2 years? It goes on to establish some requirements for the businesses. The population size of the city has to be exceeding 500. And then there's some language in there on fewer than 5 market rate residential rental units per 1,000 residents were constructed in the city in the past 10 years. The section 2 goes into the taxation of it, and just basically, if we get on the taxation part, if we get into page 6, line 616, 617, basically what that's saying is if you declare the tax deduction at the federal, we would not be able to do it at the state. And then we get to the credit for the contribution to lands trust. That just lays out that there is a 5% credit for folks that make donations for land trust, and that 5% can be taken for 20 consecutive years. And then section 5 talks about the promotion and creation of those land trusts, and that is under the authority of the Minnesota Housing and Finance Authority. And section 6 of that is for the appropriation of $5 million. That's just a real quick overview. I know that you folks are moving a lot of bills through today, so I won't take any more of your time on the overview. At this point, I would like to introduce Mark Kohlberg for his testimony.
Mr. Chairman and Senators, good afternoon. My name is Mark Kohlberg. I'm city manager in Sleepy Eye. I've been there for the last 15 years. Sleepy Eye is a community of 3,700 in Brown County, South Central Minnesota. I'm here to support Senate File 816, a bill designed after the bill enacted last year to create a pilot program to assist with workforce housing in Roseau and Pennington counties. This bill would expand that program statewide. In my time in Sleepy Eye, I've seen and experienced something that is true in many rental markets statewide. We have encouraged local investment in rental housing and have found that without some subsidy or sort of help, the construction costs of additional new housing cannot be paid back by the rents available in our market. An example of this, the typical two-bedroom apartment in Sleepy Eye rents for about $450 per month. But new construction costs demand that closer to $750 is required to make multifamily construction viable and profitable. We have tried very hard to encourage new construction, but have asked for subsidy to write down the costs of construction, and as a small community, we simply don't have the resources available. Two things that I would share with you that make this a critical need in communities like Sleepy Eye. The first is this. We have two corporate partners in Sleepy Eye that combined employ roughly 1,300 people, Del Monte Corporation and Bick Corporation. One cans vegetables and the other is the largest calendar manufacturer in the United States. Both use a large number of seasonal employees, which makes the situation even more dire. Many of these folks can't or won't sign a 12-month lease. And while they're great business residents in Sleepy Eye, corporate America is not terribly interested in financing housing like they did in some days in the past. As long as people will drive from longer distances and the workforce numbers are met, why would the employers invest in housing as they used to? I know this because we meet with these companies on a monthly basis about all aspects of their business. The second point I would make is that recently we have developed two new residential subdivisions and have worked hard to find a multifamily apartment developer for those areas. But infrastructure, street and utility construction expenses make it almost impossible to recoup that investment on straight market rent housing. Coupled with this is a recent housing study showing two glaring needs in our market: affordable worker housing, especially for part of the year housing, and additional market rate housing for retired folks who do not qualify for subsidized housing. In summary, let me say that while this bill may not solve all the problems we have and challenges in housing in Sleepy Eye, it might enable private builders to build and compete in a market that's simply not as financially viable as those of the larger metro areas. As I said, I've been in Sleepy Eye 15 years, and there hasn't been one rental rate housing development built. I urge you to consider passage of this bill as a real solution alternative to not just two counties in Minnesota, but to the entire state. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an A2 amendment, which is identical to the amendment that we added to Senate File 468.
And Senator James, I don't know if you heard the discussion or not, but...
And I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. So then this is the same amendment that we put on Senator Stump's bill. So on the Saxog A2 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion adopted. Senator James, I think what we're going to do here is your bill is very similar to Senator Stump's, but you've got some tax policy in it. And Senator Scoey needs to see the bill. And so with your permission, I think we'd like to delete sections 1 through 6.
One and
six, and then send the rest of the bill. Send the bill to taxes, because sections 1 through 6 are the same as Senator Stump's bill, are very, very similar at least. Otherwise, we have to send the whole bill to taxes. So, in other words, we'll keep the part that you really want here.
Senator, Mr. Chair, I guess I haven't had a time to make a comparison of that, so when we say it's very similar, I mean, how similar is it?
Well,
because there's some things in here I want to see move forward.
Well, if they're tax policy, they have to go to taxes, right? Right. Now, we can send the whole bill to taxes if you want. I mean, that's okay, because we've got Senator Stump's bill here, and his basically does the what you want to do and send, sets up a program statewide for housing in places where there's job growth, which is what I think your intention is here. But I'll defer to you. My plan would be to keep sections 1 through 6 here, and then send 1 and 6 here, and then send. Otherwise, we can send the whole bill to taxes.
I'll yield to that as long as my bill is covered.
Okay, Senator Scoey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dames, on page 6, lines 16 and 17, and then again on page 8, there's a subtraction being made there, it looks like, and clearly those two provisions would have to come to the tax committee. It's the center part of the bill.
Yes. Yep.
And I think what the chair is recommending is that the grant program would stay in this committee. The tax subtraction is what it looks like would travel to the tax
committee. Yes.
So, counsel, help me out here. So, we want Senator Dames's sections 1 and 6 to stay with us, and we want the bill to go to taxes. So how do we do that?
Mr. Chairman, I think we can make a motion saying we'll take out sections 1 and 6, but we'll leave them here to be considered to be included in the omnibus bill along with Senator Stump's bill, and we can compare those two provisions to see if they're similar or whatever differences there are between those two grant programs, we can talk to the authors about that. But then sections 2, 3, 4, and 5 would stay in the bill, and we would refer that bill to finance and then refer it over to taxes.
So in other words, what we'll do is we'll delete sections 1 and 6, and then we'll move that the bill be referred to taxes, and we'll have staff make sure that you and Senator Stump get together and make sure that you've got all the provisions you want and all the provisions that he wants, because I think you're both after the same thing. Okay.
Well, and
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, and I guess maybe to Senator Dames, these contributions to land trusts.
Yes.
Does that need to stay here, or does that need to go to tax committee?
That's a tax.
That's a tax also. Needs to go to taxes. So.
Okay.
Okay, so Senator Scoy will move that we delete sections 1 and 6 from the bill. We'll start out with that. How does that sound? Okay, so Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, I see what you're trying to do, and I think it's all good intentioned. I'm just questioning, once we delete something from a bill, how does it stay in this committee? Because the bill is kind of the official document that carries
we're going to be putting together an omnibus bill, and so what we would be
those
doing
would it, be possible amendments.
They could be included in the omnibus bill itself.
Sure.
And my intention would be to have Senator Dames and Senator Stump get together on the two particular bills, and if Senator Dames has some things that Senator Stump doesn't have, we'll just include it in the final version of the bill. So.
Okay.
Very good. Thanks. Unless you want to take the whole bill to taxes,
that's fine.
Okay.
We'll do it.
All right. Okay.
This way.
All right. So on the SCOE motion to delete sections 1 and 6 from Senate File 816, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted. Then on Senator SCOE's motion to move Senate File 816 and recommend it to pass and be referred to taxes or to finance first?
Finance.
The full finance, and then full finance will refer it to taxes. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay, so Senator Hur, is he available?
Yeah, he doesn't disagree.
Okay, so he's not ready yet.
Still have to wait.
Okay. Senator Dibble, are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Senator Dibble, Senate File 456. And just for the people who are here, the reason we went out of order on the agenda is because Senator Hur is presenting a bill in another committee, and he's not ready to come up here right now. So, okay, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate your willingness to hear Senate File 456. This package of proposals is brought to us by the Homes for All campaign. Proposes to add a total of $19.5 million across 6 programs at the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Taken all together, they accomplish a number of important goals, certainly to prevent homelessness, provide rental assistance, promote access to jobs, and promote economic development by connecting workers to housing throughout the state. It's estimated that this would allow the MHFA to serve an additional 6,000 households. Also, these funds allow the MHFA, as well as local units of government and developers and the like, to provide greater access to private foundation, state bonding, federal tax credits, and tax increment finance housing resources. Builds on the 7,200 households throughout the state that have been served by the MHFA as a result of the work that we did in the last biennium. A little statement about the need. You've already heard quite a bit, so I'll try to go quickly. It's estimated that 15% of Minnesota households pay more than 50% of their income for their housing. That's recognized as the point at which family budgets are under extreme pressure and extreme stress. Every night, 14,000 are homeless in Minnesota. Over half of those are children. It's estimated that 13,000 students in our schools are either homeless or highly mobile. Seniors are a growing group of those who are facing housing pressure, homelessness, or at risk of homelessness. You might have seen the Star Tribune op-ed piece that ran just a few days ago that talked about how there is a growing shortage of affordable housing in the metropolitan area. I have it stuck in my folder here. There was an interesting statistic. 36,000 people signed up for only 2,000 slots that were made available by the Met Council for Section 8 support for rental housing. 36,000 for 2,000 slots in just a few days. And that doesn't even report out the experience that Minneapolis Public Housing and St. Paul Housing have, which is very similar. Just on the radio this morning when I was driving in, I was listening about how there's just simply no market and no availability for first-time home buyers, and how rental vacancy rates are so low that it's driving up rents beyond the reach of many. So, Mr. Chair and members, I'll go to the bill very quickly, and then we have folks who can share a little bit more information about why this is such a good idea. So if you take a look at the bill, and you have a handout in your packet that looks like this, so a little chart, and that can help us step through the what the bill seeks to accomplish. The first portion, paragraph A, would seek to add $4 million over the biennium to the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Programs. So you can see that in that first row there. Provides services to households at risk of losing their housing and transitioning out of homelessness. Paragraph B is actually identical to Senator Coonan's bill, adding $4.75 million to workforce housing throughout the state. We've heard all about that.
Senator Dibble, do you want to do an amendment to make your bill?
Oh, yeah, I should do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So Senator Dibble has an A1 amendment, and what this, it's in the packet, and what it does is make Senator Dibble's bill consistent with Senator Coonan's bill.
So, exactly, yeah.
On the A1 amendment, Senator Dibble moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Senator Dibble.
Yeah, so rather than seeking over $9 million, we're looking at 4.75 for the biennium. That's what that does. Paragraph C would add $8 million to the Housing Trust Fund, and that's broken out in a couple of different parts. An additional $2 million for a one-time appropriation for assistance, rental assistance for families with children in schools who are experiencing a housing inconsistency. And as a matter of fact, Mr. Chair, we have a number of moms here whose children go to the Promise Schools. I think they're right over there. You can wave your hands. I just had a chance to visit with them out in the hallway, and they talked about how important this has been to stabilizing their families and the academic success of their children. And then $1 million in a one-time appropriation to help those who are exiting our prisons, and then adding $3 million to the base in the Housing Trust Fund to provide rental assistance. Paragraph D, and if you're following along, Mr. Chair, that's the third row in that chart. Paragraph D would add another $1 million to the Housing Finance Agency for rehabilitation loans to assist with the rehabilitation of low-income households. That's the fourth row. It also provides for some funds for energy efficiency, safety, habitability, just making housing a lot more high quality and dignified. Paragraph E would add $1.5 million for rental housing assistance for those who are experiencing chronic and persistent mental illness. That's the Bridges program. And then we would add $250,000 for just supporting the capacity, the ability of agencies around the state to provide this sort of work so that they can bolster their organizational ability to work with the Housing Finance Agency and provide housing opportunities for folks. That's the bill, Mr. Chair. Liz Coppola is going to kick us off with some testimony.
And say your name for the record and continue.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Liz Coppola, and I'm here today in my capacity as co-chair of the Homes for All Coalition. We're a statewide alliance working on statewide solutions to the affordable housing crisis. I bring to Homes for All my recent experience on the Eveleth City Council and Regional Economic Development Authority, where we wrestled with the range of housing challenges facing our town and region. How to help aging seniors who need to equip their homes with ramps for wheelchairs or walkers. How to clean up blighted properties whose homeowners lost their good-paying jobs in the 80s and lack the resources to keep them up. The need for sump pumps in basements to reduce the amount of water going through the treatment plant. How to pay for a new roof on the EDA senior high-rise when tenants' fixed incomes make it hard to raise the rent. How to balance the need for property tax dollars in town when young families would rather live on larger lots in the neighboring township. How to help the Veterans Organization develop their much-needed transitional housing after another returning combat veteran took his own life. How to prepare for the influx of workers for the promising mining jobs on the horizon. How to address the loss of mental health beds when the state was looking to shift funding to the larger regional hospitals for greater cost efficiency. How to convert one-bedroom public housing units to accommodate families when the feds were cutting capital funding. How to make sure there is housing nearby to accommodate the new $10 an hour jobs at the industrial park. These were just a few of the housing challenges in one small town. Other towns obviously have different challenges. As the Homes for All Alliance, we've been working with a broad range of partners for the past 4 years to address the continuum of housing need in a way that is flexible enough to meet the unique challenges and opportunities of local communities and can leverage local, federal, private, and philanthropic funds. Homes for All does not have a one-size-fits-all solution. As a group of 170 organizations, including for-profit, non-profit developers, school officials, housing and healthcare practitioners, local units of government, workers, homeless advocates, and faith communities, who look to local market analyses and job growth data to shape our priorities, we've identified 11 targeted investments that can meet diverse community needs to create housing stability across the state of Minnesota. Six of these funds that Senator Dibble outlined are here in this committee. The others are in the Health and Human Services Committee. Together, they fund a continuum from homeless prevention to addressing crisis housing, rental assistance, and development for the range of workers that make up our communities. We have three testifiers who will describe the MHFA programs in greater detail. Thank you.
Go ahead and say your name for the record.
Tammy Moses from Rochester.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tammy Moses, and I am the Director of Youth Programs in the Mankato and Rochester area for Lutheran Social Service. I serve the entire southern region, Minnesota, north of the Iowa border, south of Northfield, and between Pipestone and Winona, so we cover a wide range. I also serve as the facilitator for the Family Homeless Prevention Assistance Program Advisory Committee in the Mankato area, and that committee provides FHPAP services to Mankato and the nine surrounding counties. LSS provides service statewide across the lifespan. Specifically, our housing and homeless services are primarily in Duluth, Virginia, Brainerd, Wilmer, Mankato, Rochester, and the metro area. SF 456 includes an increase of $4 million for FHPAP. FHPAP funds are used for a broad range of activities aimed at homelessness prevention, minimizing episodes of homelessness, and eliminating repeat episodes of homelessness. LSS puts these dollars to work in Brainerd, St. Paul, Minneapolis, and in Rochester. Just yesterday, I met with an 18-year-old male and his LSS outreach worker. In an effort to find affordable housing in the Rochester area, he had to look outside of the city limits and was able to find housing in Stuartville. However, with that housing, that now meant an increase in his transportation expenses to get him to and from work. So we were able, because of the assistance to this youth we received from case management, as well as FHPAP fundings, he now has safe housing and a budget in place to help him sustain his housing to hopefully avoid another episode of being homeless. FHPAP programs provide direct assistance and services to households at risk of losing housing and transitioning out of homelessness. We expect that this increase will be able to help an additional 4,836 households statewide. SF 456 includes an increase of $8 million to the Housing Trust Fund. The Housing Trust Fund provides rental assistance for households previously homeless. The Housing Trust Fund also includes a pilot program for highly motivated youth. Almost half of those youth in the most recent Wilder Research Homeless Survey were young people. These are young Minnesotans just starting out on their lives. It is imperative that we create a path to future success instead of preordaining them to the continued cycle of homelessness. LSS administers this assistance in Anoka, Carver, Scott, Hennepin, Ramsey, and Washington counties. This funding also includes $1 million for an ex-offender pilot, which has been a partnership providing housing stability to ex-offenders. With additional funding asked for, the Housing Trust Fund can support an additional 730 households. Another $2 million for the highly mobile student pilot would serve 130 families. $1 million for re-entry would serve 100 households. The remaining would serve about 500 households for the biennium. It costs approximately $5,000 per year to provide households with rental assistance, and this would assume that we serve the same families for both years of the biennium. Brief story about the Housing Trust Fund I'd like to share with you. Lisa and her 11-year-old son, Brian, entered our transitional housing program in June of 2014. Lisa lost both of her parents in a tragic car accident when she was a young girl. Fortunately, she and her two sisters were able to move in with a grandmother. Unfortunately, when the grandmother passed away, Lisa and her sisters could not afford the rent, and they became homeless. Lisa was highly motivated and set goals for herself as soon as she entered into the program. She had four main goals. They were to obtain employment, to purchase a vehicle, to transition off of mainstream resources, and to secure permanent affordable housing. Within 2 weeks of entering the program, Lisa obtained employment in the service industry and took every shift that she could, that she was offered, and even offered to pick up extra shifts in order to save money for that vehicle that she so desperately needed. By the end of September 2014, Lisa had saved enough money to purchase and maintain the vehicle. In December 2014, Lisa obtained employment in the banking industry, which increased her income significantly and will allow Lisa multiple career opportunities. Because of her increase in income, Lisa is no longer accessing any services except for the rental subsidy. Lisa's story is truly a success. Without the support of the rental subsidy, she and her son would likely be homeless and would require additional supports. Because of the rental subsidy, she and her son are on their way to complete independence. Thank you.
Senator Dibble, before we go on, who in here has testifiers that are from far away on your bill? Senator Sachs, do you have some testifiers? Senator Sparks, how far away are yours?
Windham.
And I'm just wondering, Senator Dibble, would you mind holding off on your testimony? We could still lay the bill over for possible inclusion, and we can get the testimony another day. Is that all right?
That's fine. That's fine.
I mean, I'm not
Mr.
trying
Chair,
to.
Chair, we do have one person, perhaps that
from far away.
From far away.
Okay, let's bring up
to the table.
Is that okay, Sue? Okay. All right.
She's here all the time.
Yeah, she's here all the time. So let's bring up.
She does good work and support everything.
Is it Jenny? Go ahead and just say your name for the record.
I'm Jenny Larson. I'm the Community Development Director at Three Rivers Community Action in Zumbrota.
Okay.
We're a private nonprofit that works across the continuum of communities, large and small, throughout southeastern Minnesota. And we work on things like the continuum of care. We coordinate the continuum of care for homeless programming throughout a 20-county region. We provide case management services and for transitional housing, permanent supportive housing. We're a nonprofit developer, so we build and preserve affordable rental and single-family homes. We provide financial literacy, homebuyer education, individual counseling, down payment assistance to households preparing for homeownership, and we administer the rehabilitation loan programs for low-income homeowners. Because we work in many different communities in greater Minnesota, we know that the housing needs vary by city, but successful communities require a range of housing opportunities for their residents. What we like about Homes for All and the Homes for All Coalition is that it works across the continuum of housing to meet the needs that an individual community might have. Today, I just want to comment on a couple of the programs that are in the bill, and we've heard a lot about the Challenge Fund already. I'm not going to say too much more about it, other than it is the state's most flexible source of financing for affordable and workforce housing, and we've seen it used for everything from rental housing to homeownership opportunities, and we would encourage the inclusion of that in any bill that moves forward. We know that there's been a lot of investment in housing in recent years, and we very much appreciate that. But we know that there's a lot of work to be done. In our region alone, we have a recent housing study that shows a need for 3,700 units of affordable housing in Olmsted County, 227 units in the city of Austin, and 292 units in Rice County, among other housing studies that we've seen. The increase in challenge funds that we're proposing would create approximately 1,520 additional units of affordable and workforce housing across the state, and this is a good investment. History shows that for every dollar in state funding for gap financing leverages at least $3 in private financing, and for every dollar in state funding for preservation of federally assisted housing, $4 in future federal funding is secured. As an example of a project that Three Rivers is working on, we're working with the Austin HRA and other local supporters, including the Hormel Foundation, to identify a site for a rental townhome project that would house some of the local workforce, some of whom we know are driving from as far away as the Twin Cities to work in Austin. So this is needed. The second program I want to mention is the Single Family Rehab Loan Program. This is the funding that provides basic home improvements that directly affect the safety, habitability, energy efficiency, and accessibility of those in single family housing across the state. This fund is heavily relied on in greater Minnesota. It serves some of the lowest income residents in our communities and helps them make health and safety repairs to their homes so that they can stay in them. Three Rivers works with a lot of homeowners in our area who apply for these funds for important things like roofs, plumbing, electrical, mechanical work. And I would say that the majority of applicants that we serve are seniors or disabled households who are on fixed incomes and just really don't have any other options. So the proposed increase in funding would allow us to serve approximately 300 households. It currently serves about 300 households per biennium. The increase would allow another 50 households to be served across the state. And finally, I want to mention the capacity building in a portion of the initiative. Senate File 456 provides a small increase of $250,000 to the capacity building fund, which will further fund regional coordination of the continuum of care and to support capacity building for development in areas of the state that lack development resources. In the Southeast region, the coordination of the continuum of care is paid for in part by fees to the homeless providers. So the funds that we're able to secure in other sources are not sufficient. So we have to charge all of the group in the continuum a small fee to provide that coordination. And what that means is that funds are taken away from the program side of the operations. So this would help us to restore some of those program dollars. And as for the capacity building across the state, Three Rivers, we're a nonprofit developer, And we've been working with other nonprofits in other parts of the state who see the shortages in their area and they want to do something about it. And so having some funds, some flexible funds for capacity building would help them, would help us work with them, and it would help them be able to build the capacities to fill in the needs across greater Minnesota. So I thank you for your support today.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Okay, Senator Dibble.
Then, any questions?
Any questions of Senator Dibble? Okay, seeing none, then we'll lay over Senate File 456 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you all very much. Senator Sparks and Senator Saxog, who's going to go first?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Saxog, pick one. I think take the guy from Bemidji, okay, because he's probably farthest away. Then we'll put Senator Sparks up if we can get him in. I apologize for rushing through this. We have until 2 o'clock today, and we have been thinking about extending the committee hearing today for people who have come from out of town, but it appears that all the rooms are already reserved, and so there's no place for us to go after this particular meeting. So we're going to try and get these bills in and get them done with for now. So Senator Saxog, is it Senate File 420? Is that what you want to do?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we'll try to be try to expedite this as much as possible. First of all, I have the A3 amendment, and Ms. Fontaine will maybe explain that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members.
Ms. Fontaine.
Does everyone have the amendment?
Everybody's got the amendment in the packet. This is an author's amendment, and is this the first place it was?
No, we're on the
it was at another place. Okay, go ahead. Okay, Mr. go ahead and explain the amendment, Ms. Fontaine.
Mr. Chair and members, some changes were made to reflect that these career counseling coordinators would not be school counselors, and to just make sure that we know that they won't be replacing that school counselor function that's in Minnesota rules, so that clarification has been added in the amendment. And then also in the amendment, We've made other clarifications that the counseling will be not school counseling, but will be a separate function through this career counseling coordinator. And then also in the appropriation section, the under section 3 of the bill with the appropriation to the Minnesota Youth Program, it would be $10 million in fiscal year 16 and 17, and then $3.5 million each year from the Workforce Development Fund. And in paragraph B on line 3.4, the $6 million of the general fund appropriation would be going for outside of the metropolitan area to the service centers for these activities around career counseling to youth. But the money that would have been going, the $2 million of the Workforce Development Fund money, will no longer be specified to go outside of the metro area. There are formulas already in statute for the Minnesota Youth Program that determine how the funds will be distributed to provide equitable services. So those are the changes that are in the amendment.
Are there any questions or comments on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, then Senator Saxog moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion adopted. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today, Senator Dames and I are presenting Senate File 420. This bill is the bipartisan culmination of the Senate Rural Task Force. Senators on that task force were Weber, Jensen, Rosen, Gazulka, Eakin, Dames, Dahl, as well as myself. We identified workforce training as the number one issue affecting economic growth throughout rural Minnesota. This bill will connect the dots between businesses looking to expand training programs and high school students by funding our rural workforce centers to hire rural career counseling coordinators. With us today is Dan Wiener, Executive Director of the Rural Minnesota Concentrated Employment Program, to give a brief presentation. But before that, I'm going to turn it over to Senator Dames, who's got a few comments.
Well, thank you, Senator Saxhog, and Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Senator Gary Dames, for the record. And I would just like to state the importance of this bill. This bill will give our high school students an opportunity to see what kind of trades programs are out there, get an exposure to those programs, also find out what skills are going to be needed to function in those programs, and then with our career counselors that they can be using, they'll also be able to find out what jobs are available in our rural communities, and like I said, what skills and stuff it'll take to meet those jobs. So I think overall, it's a very good bill to give our students another opportunity. A lot of students feel their only direction is a four-year college, and I think this bill will bring about some other options for them, give them some exposure so they can make a decision if they want to go into the trades or just what they might want to do. And there's a lot of good trades opportunities out there. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing your testimony.
Thank you.
Next. Thank you, Chairman. Chairman Senator Thomasoni and members of the committee, my name is Dan Winter. I'm the director of Rural Minnesota Concentrated Employment Program, headquartered out of Detroit Lakes, which I guess makes me from far, far away.
Really far away.
Really far away, yeah. The remarks I have today are included in the folder labeled Rural Minnesota SEP. I'm going to cut out huge chunks of what I was going to say in
Thank
the interest
you.
Of time here, but please read it if you get a chance, and please call and call me with questions. My number is in there. Again, just a brief background. Rural Minnesota SEP provides workforce development services in 19 counties. Bemidji is one of our cities, by the way. There's a map in the folder. Our territory stretches from Lake of the Woods to Morrison, from Little Falls to Moorhead. This 20,000 square mile territory is also known as Workforce Area 2. What we do is assist people attain the training they need to get to work, from how to find a job to job-specific skills training. There are 16 workforce areas covering all of Minnesota. In each, a Workforce Investment Board, which is employer-led, provides strategic guidance. Senate File 420 includes initiatives that will greatly enhance the ability of SEP and other greater Minnesota workforce areas to address the workforce needs of youth and local employers. Funding is included for rural workforce system coordinators. Workforce areas have been very successful in bringing together local entities, including education, government, nonprofits, employers, and workers, to identify and coordinate on workforce issues. Given the distances involved in rural areas, there's always more that could be done to align activities. The addition of regional coordinators would significantly bolster this effort. Among the biggest frustration for employers in my area is a lack of work ethic among many of the young people they hire. In my mind, though, this is a skills issue. Senate File 420 includes funding for the Minnesota Youth Program. This program is key in providing resources to develop basic work skills in young people. MYP work readiness training focuses on behaviors employers value, such as attendance, punctuality, teamwork, communication skills, and problem solving. In MYP, the basic work skills of each youth are evaluated by staff. Skill deficiency are addressed through individual counseling curricula, and most importantly, by placing young people in subsidized employment. Working is the best way to learn how to work. Workforce areas are particularly well positioned to implement these programs because they have relationships with local work sites, which can be utilized to develop work skills and an in-depth knowledge of local labor markets and the occupational needs and opportunities in key industries. What's interesting and valuable about the Minnesota Youth Program is it offers services in all 87 Minnesota counties and leverages significant additional federal and local resources and partnerships in order to prepare youth for the workplace. Senate File 420 would allow for over three times the current number of young people across the state to have an opportunity to develop those vital work skills and gain essential work experience, which employers need. Also in Senate File 420 are provisions to expand one of our core activities, career exploration and planning. The service has been provided to youth to meet low-income criteria for 45 years. 2 years ago, the legislature provided funding to allow several workforce areas to expand career exploration and planning to any high school student, regardless of income, through a pilot project. This pilot is exploring the feasibility of taking the labor market knowledge and career planning expertise of Workforce Center youth staff and making it available to schools. In this pilot, rural Minnesota SEP staff, who are also Workforce Center staff, work with high school students in Moorhead, Dilworth, Glendon, Felton, Barnesville, Yulin, Hitterdahl, and the Red River Area Learning Center. Career counseling and knowledge of demand occupations increase the likelihood of youth making well-informed career choices which post-secondary institutions to attend. Workforce Center staff are able to focus on career exploration and planning, allowing high schools to focus on education. Workforce Center staff use their knowledge and expertise to assist students to identify a career in an occupation in demand. Our staff can then work with students to identify the specific steps to enter the career. The result is a plan which facilitates entry into a field in which local employers need workers. The funds included SF-420 would build on the success of the pilot projects and allow career counseling to be implemented across the state. And as far as us working with our local schools, there's a couple of unsolicited letters in the folder that I made available to you. I want to leave you with one final thought. It's the foundational philosophy of my organization, Rural Minnesota SEP, that work is the key to a successful life. Skilled workers are key to business success. Skilled workers and thriving businesses are key to strong rural economies. The strength of Minnesota's economy is dependent on the strength of the economy of Greater Minnesota. Senate File 420 will go a long way towards ensuring the economic strength of both rural Minnesota and the entire state, and thank you.
Thank you. Any comments or questions from anybody on the committee? Okay, Senator Saxhog, then we'll lay over Senate File 420 for possible, as amended, for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Sparks, can you do yours at the time allotted here?
How many?
About 5 or 10 minutes.
Three. Mr. Chair, you know, it looks like a good time to do bills to me.
It looks like a really good time. I know if we can make it. We'll do it if we can make it.
Mr. Chairman and members, Senator thank you Sparks. For hearing Senate File 764. The legislation is similar to some of the other proposals you've heard today, attempting to address the problem of lack of workforce housing in Greater Minnesota. We have a three-pronged approach that allows for successful programs operating in our neighborhood states. Obviously, we have a busy schedule, so I'll turn it over to my testifiers. I don't know if Mr. Dorman or Mr. Nasby would like to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Dorman, you're not going first. The guy,
all right.
The guy from
beautiful.
Wyndham
thank you.
First, okay? All right. Is this the guy from Wyndham?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Nasby, you go first. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. My name is Steve Nasby. I'm the city administrator in Wyndham, Minnesota. You should have a letter handed out to you from the Toro Company. I was meeting with them yesterday on actually a parking and traffic issue, and mentioned I was coming up here, and they said, hey, can we get you a letter to get off to the folks? Housing is just vitally important in our area. You've heard from many other cities and testifiers about the whys and wherefores. In Wyndham, we have Toro, which is a big manufacturer. They've hired over 200 people in the last few months. They have people driving from 75 miles away to come to our plant to work. In order for Toro and PM Wyndham, big game, fast distributing to grow, we need to have housing. And as a testifier from City of Sleepy Eye testified, we can build housing, but it won't appraise for the value, so we don't have the market willing to do that. I've been a city administrator in Wyndham for 9 years. In the last 5 years, we've had less than 5 housing units built. So that tells you that we can't generate a market. Even though we have the jobs, we just can't generate the private market. So anything we can do for workforce housing support would be greatly appreciated, and I think this bill is certainly one step in that direction. So thank you very much.
Mr. Dorman, do you have anything to add?
It's a well-reasoned and insightful bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay. This is Senator Sparks. This bill has some tax credits in it, but I understand you have another bill that addresses it.
Mr. Chairman, maybe you want to visit with Senator Skoy. We just were talking about that. I think there's another vehicle, but I understand Senator Stumps, maybe if you want to pull the tax provisions out and send it to tax.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sparks, if you have these provisions in tax committee, that's all I care about. How do they get there?
Senator, Mr. Dorman?
Mr. Chair, we're hoping to get that, we're hoping to have it be drafted hopefully by the end of the day, and we'll get the tax provisions when they're busy.
It's my understanding that this one isn't as simple to pull apart as the other one was. Okay. And so Because otherwise we'll have to send this to taxes. Okay, Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, we passed this out of state and local the other day, so I didn't get a chance to talk about the financing of it. I've just preliminarily added up some of the costs, and it looks like it's $140 million to the general fund. Is that correct? Or with the tax credits and the dollars for the to establish it?
Mr. Dorman?
Mr. Chair, Senator, $100 million, I believe, over the biennium.
Okay, and I guess what I'm getting at, Mr. Chair, this is coming out of the general fund, so I know you're going to put together a great bill, but I'm wondering where all this money is going to come from. It's
Senator Scalzi, that's why we have to talk to Senator Cohen.
Yes.
And maybe even Senator Scoy here and find out exactly how this is all going to work. How much of the $100 million is tax credits?
$60
million. About $60 million. Okay, all right. Okay, so somewhere along the way, part of this bill is going to end up in the tax committee, and part of it's going to stay here. So is there any further comments or questions from Senator Sparks or the witnesses? Okay, seeing none, then we'll lay over Senate File 764 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for this.
Thank you.
Senator, where are your people from?
Here in...
But are they all from the
I've lost
area?
My way in my
How about where are your people from?
I've got somebody who can't come back.
Oh, can't come back? All right, Senator Saxon, let's start your bill at least and get that person to testify, okay?
This one.
We only got 5 minutes.
On the back.
Which one?
What's this? Senate File 461.
This is K through kindergarten through 12.
Mm, there we go. Oh, my
God. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Today we have Senate File 461. It appropriates $500,000 per year for grants to Resource Inc. This money will enable Resource Inc. to assist those facing mental illness and chemical dependency achieve economic stability. Resource is a trusted workforce and jobs training partner that currently serves more than 20,000 people per year in 17 Minnesota counties. With me today is Kelly Matter, President and CEO of Resource Inc., Tamara Anderson, HR and Safety Director of Morrissey Inc., and Randy Flowers, client of Resource Inc., to give some brief presentations. With that, Mr. Chair,
okay.
I'll turn it
one,
over.
One moment. Senator Herr wants to address the people that came because we're going to have to wait until Monday to do his bill. But go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you for the time. I know that there's a busy schedule for me today. I really appreciate all the folks that came here to see the success of the home bill. I really appreciate your being here. We're going to be short of time, and so we're going to postpone the bill till Monday. But, you know, my heart is with you. So do come again on Monday, as we'll plan to see the bill be included in the omnibus bill.
It'll be first up on Monday, so we'll make sure we get it taken care of. So, okay, Senator Saxon, go ahead with your testifiers.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just say your name for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Tomasoni and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Matter, and I'm the president and CEO of Resource. And I'm.
And just so you guys know, we got 3 minutes. Okay?
So shrink it up.
Yes. Okay.
So, yes, I will be brief. I represent Resource, a 54-year-old organization that provides services to 20,000 individuals annually in the areas of chemical and mental health, employment, and career education. We are unique in the continuum of our services as well as our focus on zero exclusion, serving Minnesota's most vulnerable citizens. While I would have liked to have went through some of our outcomes, many of them are in your packet, I just want to say that we hold ourselves accountable to the highest outcome standards and impact with the individuals that we serve. We collaborate closely with hundreds of business partners, and Tamara Anderson will talk about a relationship with her company, Morrissey, Inc. Really today, what I want to talk about is the reason that we're here. This is new to us. We've never been to the legislature for a direct appropriation. In fact, and indeed this year, we are advocating for other bills and are in favor and support of the dire need for affordable housing for the individuals we serve. We partner closely with DEED, Department of Human Services, and other state agencies. But what brings us here and asking for direct appropriation is the connection that we have not been able to make to serve individuals with a chemical addiction or a serious mental illness to traditional workforce services and the funding that supports traditional workforce services. We serve over 6,000 individuals every year with a chemical addiction and or a serious mental illness, and we need and want to provide the right service at the right time, many of whom do not meet the basic entrance criteria for our traditional workforce funding programs, of which we're a big player and a big partner in. We are serving people who can work, who want to work. We would like to use this direct appropriation to make that better connection for the right service, the right service at the right time, and more importantly, the right employment opportunity at the right time. And with that, Chairman Tomasoni and committee members, I would like to turn it over to Tamara Anderson.
Who's from farthest away here?
I'm Tamara Anderson. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tamara Anderson.
I'm with Human Resources. You have 2 minutes for the two of you. Okay?
And Safety Director at Morrissey, Inc. I've been working with, as a business partner, with certainly Kelly Matter and her group, Resource, for about 30 years. And over the past 30 years, I've hired many students from their office skills training, warehouse, core manufacturing, maintenance custodial, and business facilities training group. I just want to say one thing. The quality of their educational programming is exceptional, and they work very closely with business partners like myself in really calibrating relevant and current skills and certainly meet the needs of employers. They know their clients really well. They care about their clients. And, you know, it's one of those things where I've worked with them for 30 years. I hire a lot of their individuals just because they've got the right training, and they certainly come in with the right ethics, work ethics as well.
Mr. Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Randy Flowers. I'm a part of Resources. I was one of their clients. Basically, I keep it fairly simple to this committee.
Can you speak into the microphone better?
Basically, I would like to keep it simple, sir. This organization has allowed me to make the necessary adjustments to make changes in my life. The program, as far as the employment part of it, the chemical and mental health part gave me the foundation. Now I can build a house based upon the skills that I've been able to learn through the program. What I basically am so proud about with this organization is that they gave me hope, and not only hope, they gave me the foundation to help other people by allowing us to form our own committee and work with them and listen to what we need. And they know that we responded to what we need by saying, hey, we need jobs, we're willing to work, and that's the program they bring to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I apologize to everybody. This is one of the issues we're running into quite often around the Capitol because of the construction. Otherwise, we would have much more time to do these, and we're not trying to discount the importance of anybody's bill or the importance of anybody's program. But unfortunately, we have time constraints this year that we've never experienced before. And so with that, Senator Saxog, we will have to lay over Senate File 461 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill unless you want to have more testimony in the next committee hearing.
I think that these three did a very good job of being concise.
Okay.
And the bills, if you would lay this over for possible inclusion, that would be...
Okay. Senate File 461 is laid over, and with that, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. Yeah.